Eddie, the Junior Year. Chapter 5. Spring Track Tryouts, Part 2. At the end of the day, the second day of tryouts begins. Barbara helps Wendy move the equipment to the track as the athletes get ready for another session of pushing themselves to the limit. Bobby B. has Erika convinced that no one is better qualified than her to move the shot put, so Bobby B. and Erika move the shot put out to the field together. After yesterday's fiasco with Chucky, Erika is glad to ride out to the track on Bobby B.'s lap. Everyone meets out on the track today, and unlike yesterday, everyone arrives safely. Paula and Erika decide that they prefer running, and really don't want to throw the discus. Kathy, however, makes it known that she is still interested in the discus. On the way to the track, the three women inform Mr. Fraser of their interests. Mr. Fraser tells Paula and Erika that if they prefer running, that is just fine. Mr. Fraser also informs Kathy that, if she wants to throw the discus, she is welcome to do that in addition to running. The first thing on the agenda is to have the milers run a race for time. Yesterday was a cut session. Today is a performance session. Gary Mitchell, Jeff Davis, Amber Amy, and Adekunle Akinmola were the top seeds from yesterday, so they will get the inside starting positions. Barbara gets them ready to run before Mr. Fraser gets the sprinters organized. Barbara tells the field of runners that this is a race for time and to forget any strategy. She tells them to run their fastest today, and that earning a position on the team is dependent on their time. Barbara starts the race, and Mitchell takes an early lead. Mitchell usually does not like to be in the lead. He prefers being in second place during the first three quarters of a mile. Akinmola is right behind Mitchell. Amber, who has been running with Mitchell for years, settles in at third place for the first two laps. The rest of the field is bunched up behind Davis, who is in fourth place. Mr. Fraser tells Eddie and Mark to organize the 100-yard dash because he wants to watch the mile. Eddie tells the sprinters to form groups of four and to line up behind the blocks. Eddie, Mark, Kathy, and Paula will be in the first heat. Braden, Johnson, Erika, and Hoffa will be in the second heat. Eddie has everyone lined up and ready to go when Mr. Fraser is ready. Meanwhile, the mile is nearly finished. Mitchell is still in the lead, but Akinmola is pushing him hard. Mr. Fraser jogs over to Barbara, who is recording the lead runner's split times. Barbara mentions to Mr. Fraser, "The new guy is pretty good." Mr. Fraser replies, "I can see that. He's really pushing Mitchell hard." Barbara asks, "What year is he in?" Mr. Fraser replies, "He's only a sophomore." Barbara exclaims, "It looks like you have another winner, and for 3 years." The race comes to a close, and Mitchell crosses the finish line first. Akinmola is not very far behind. Davis comes in third place, with Amber right behind him. Mr. Fraser takes a look at the times, and is excited to see that he has two milers that are at the state level performance, and two more that are very strong contenders. Barbara tells the milers to take a loop around the cross-country trail, reminding them that they are on the clock. Mr. Fraser and Barbara then jog back to the sprinters, seeing everyone ready to run. Mr. Fraser and Barbara get into position at the finish line, ready to time the runners. At the starting line, Braden will be the starter. Braden announces, "On your marks." He then announces, "Set." Braden fires the gun, and the first heat is off. Kathy lets out her primal scream, startling some of the freshmen. This is a well-matched heat. At 25 yards, Eddie is in the lead, with Kathy right behind him. Mark is barely a half step behind Kathy. Paula is right there, just behind Mark. At 50 yards, Eddie is in the lead, and Kathy is still right behind him. Mark and Paula are tied, not far behind the leaders. At the finish line, Eddie crosses first. Kathy finishes in second place, not too far behind Eddie. Mark and Paula tie for third place. Mr. Fraser exclaims, the winning time was a 9.6. Can you believe it? A 9.6. This is what I expect. Braden hands the gun to one of the runners in the heat lined up behind him. That runner will be the starter for Braden's heat. Braden and the rest of his heat get ready to run. Braden looks toward the school and exclaims, uh-oh. Here comes some big trouble. Let's get moving and get this over with. Something's going down, and I want to be there when it happens. Braden wants a front row seat to what is going to be coming down. The starter begins the race, which Braden is clearly leading. But walking from the school to the track, on crutches, is none other than Mr. Crum. Mr. Crum takes quite a while, with his mangled leg, to get to the track. Mr. Fraser ignores Mr. Crum, paying him not one bit of attention. Kathy, standing with Eddie near the finish line, knows exactly why Mr. Crum is coming out to the track. Mr. Crum makes a beeline to the discus pad. It just as easily could be said that Mr. Crum made a turtle line to the discus pad since he is not moving very fast. At the discus pad, Springer is making a throw. Mr. Zunday is at the shot put pad, working closely with the shot put athletes today. Although he is aware that Mr. Crum is approaching, Mr. Zunday pays him absolutely no attention. Finally arriving at the discus pad, Mr. Crum asks Springer, who threw the discus at me yesterday? Springer replies, I don't know. Mr. Crum exclaims, how can you possibly not know? You were right here. Springer replies, I wasn't paying attention. I was up last, so I was talking to Bobby B for a few minutes. Mr. Crum, not accepting Springer's answer at face value, asks again, commanding Springer, let me make this clear. I want you to tell me who threw the discus at me yesterday. Springer replies, and let me make this clear. I don't know any more about who threw the discus at you yesterday than I know who is on the shot put pad at this moment. I don't know who is running in the sprints right now. I don't know who's next up throwing the javelin. And I don't even know who is throwing the discus after I make this throw. I'm too focused on what I'm doing to pay any attention to anyone else. And that probably holds true for everyone else out here. Springer just gave Mr. Crum an education on how intensely athletes focus on their event. Mr. Crum tells Springer, well, someone must know. Springer informs Mr. Crum, out of all the athletes out here, you might find two or three people who may know who made that throw. When Mr. Zunday told us to ground all implements, we took that to mean it's break time. All of a sudden, Mr. Crum realizes that he is not the center of the universe. He walks away and sits on the bench near the field area, wondering what to do next. Mr. Crum has figured it out. He walks over and tells Mr. Zunday that he wants to speak to all the field athletes immediately. Mr. Zunday questions Mr. Crum's motive. Mr. Crum explains to Mr. Zunday that it must have been one of the field athletes that threw the discus at him. Mr. Crum can clearly see that all of the field athletes are near the discus pad. He can also see that all of the track athletes are running around the track, or running sprints. They are not even in the vicinity of the discus pad. So, Mr. Crum's logic dictates that it was a field athlete that threw the discus at him. Mr. Crum could have just as easily ruled out the baseball players, since they are on the other side of the schoolyard. Mr. Zunday tells all the field athletes to gather in a group. Mr. Zunday tells the group, Mr. Crum wants to talk to you. I will give him 5, maybe 10 minutes. The time that Mr. Zunday allots to Mr. Crum will depend on how entertaining the conversation becomes. Mr. Crum tells the field athletes, one of you threw the discus at me yesterday. I want to know who it was. Everyone is silent. Mr. Crum exclaims, someone must know. I want to know who it was. Bobby B asks, so you think someone threw the discus at you? Mr. Crum replies, yes. Someone sitting right here threw the discus at me. Bobby B. asks Mr. Crumb, where were you standing? Pointing to the field, Mr. Crumb exclaims, over there, in the field, to the right of where Mr. Fraser is standing. Throwing out a challenge, Bobby B. then tells Mr. Zunday, Springer has the best aim of anyone here. And he's been throwing the discus longer than everyone else. I'll give him $100 if he can hit me. If I have to move even an inch, I'll consider it a hit. Mr. Zunday tells the group, did you hear that, everyone? $100 if Springer can hit Bobby B. Bobby B. is smart. If Springer throws the discus anywhere near Bobby B., he will be sure to get out of its way. Bobby B. tells Mr. Crumb, I'm going to go stand where you were. Tell me when I get there. Bobby B. walks about 130 feet out into the field. Mr. Crumb yells to Bobby B., move to the right. Bobby B. moves to the right a few feet. Mr. Crumb yells to Bobby B., there. Right about there. Mr. Zunday tells Springer, go ahead. Try to hit him with the discus. Springer exclaims, really? Mr. Zunday tells Springer, you heard him. Bobby B. said he'll give you $100 if you can hit him with the discus. You have the best aim of anyone here. Try to hit him with the discus. He'll move out of the way if he's about to get hit, unlike someone else around here. Springer has been throwing the discus for a while, and his throws are usually dead center in the landing sector. Springer takes the discus and looks at Bobby B. out in the field. Springer carefully calculates his throw, knowing he has to go slightly left, and not as quite far as he would usually throw. He goes into the spin and releases the discus. The discus soars toward Bobby B. and lands on the ground 20 feet from where he is standing. Bobby B. grins and yells to Springer, try again. You missed. Springer takes another discus and makes a second try. Springer again misses, but this time by only 15 feet. Bobby B. retrieves the discuses and walks back to the discus pad. Mr. Crumb boldly asks, and what was the point of this exercise? Bobby B. replies, no one here can throw the discus and hit a target over 100 feet away, especially a moving target. The discus is not thrown for accuracy. It's thrown for distance, and only distance. Mr. Zunday is impressed with Bobby B.'s dissertation, so he lets him continue. Everyone is learning a valuable lesson at the moment. Bobby B. hands Springer a discus, telling him, here, throw the discus again. Bobby B. tells Mr. Crumb, watch him carefully as he throws. Springer is on the discus pad, facing away from the field, getting ready to throw the discus. Bobby B. tells Mr. Crumb, notice that Springer is not even facing the field. If someone was out on the field right now, he wouldn't even know it. Springer goes into the spin and releases the discus. After the release, Springer follows through with his momentum. Bobby B. explains to Mr. Crumb, at no point during the discus throw was Springer looking at the field. But he knows exactly where the landing zone is at all times. He knows this by experience, not because he sees it. And his body was spinning the entire time. Even if he could look at the field, anything out there would be a big blur to him anyway. Throwing a discus is not like throwing a baseball or football. You're not trying to hit a target. Mr. Zunday tells Bobby B., thank you, Bobby B. I couldn't have explained it better myself. The field athletes all clap in response to Bobby B.'s presentation. Mr. Zunday then focuses his attention on Mr. Crumb. He tells him, Mr. Crumb, no one intentionally tried to hit you with the discus. You got in its way. And it was your own fault. You're just lucky it wasn't the javelin. Now, we have work to do here. If you have any more issues to discuss, please do it on your own time, during school hours. Although he does not like it, Mr. Crumb understands Bobby B's illustration. Mr. Crumb tells Mr. Zunday, "Okay, that will be enough for now. I'm going to think about this. Everyone can go back to practicing." Mr. Zunday tells Wendy to give Mr. Crumb a ride back to the school. Mr. Crumb thought this was a nice gesture on the part of Mr. Zunday. The reality of the situation is that Mr. Zunday wanted to get rid of Mr. Crumb as fast as possible, having Wendy dispose of him. After Mr. Crumb is gone, the field athletes get back to work. Wendy has disposed of Mr. Crumb and, on her way back, retrieves a few implements laying on the field. When Wendy returns, she tells Mr. Zunday, "Mr. Crumb was still stuck on who threw the discus at him. He asked me, 'Do you know which one of the guys threw it at me?' So I asked him, 'How do you know it wasn't one of the girls, or me?' And so he said, 'A girl couldn't throw the discus 20 feet. Even I know that.'" Mr. Zunday tells Wendy, "Good. Kathy's in the clear then, at least for now." Mr. Zunday now has one less problem to deal with during the next few days. Back on the track, Mr. Fraser has identified a freshman, John Elliott, who is a reasonably good distance man and a good sprinter. With a little work, he will undoubtedly prove to be a key member of the team in the upcoming years. Between John Elliott, Amber Amy, and Adekunle Akinmola, considerable talent has been added to the team this spring. Any one of them already has the potential to make it to the state invitational meet. While the 440-yard dash time trials are underway, Eddie and the tribe take some time out to explain to Akinmola one of the team's controversies. They plan to explain how other teams believe Mr. Fraser traveled to the Amazon to bring women back to run track. They also plan on explaining to Akinmola, at some time, that Mr. Ruff thinks that Mr. Fraser traveled to Africa to find him, but they'll save that for another time. Eddie, Mark, Kathy, Paula, Johnson, and Hoffa formally introduce themselves to Akinmola. The rest of the tribe is running or busy doing something else at the moment. Eddie tells Akinmola, "Hey, we got to fill you in on something." Akinmola replies, "Who's filling me in on what?" Eddie replies, "Me, Eddie." Trying to get straight who is who, Akinmola replies, "So, you're Eddie?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. That's me." Akinmola asks Eddie, "What do I need to know that's so important?" Kathy and Paula explain the Amazon women controversy to Akinmola in great detail. Eddie, Mark, Johnson, and Hoffa all help with filling in the details. Akinmola asks many, many questions. In fact, Akinmola often answers a question with another question. This seems to be part of his personality. Track is very important to Akinmola and his family. Akinmola tells the group that his parents moved from Nigeria and picked this school district because of the reputation of the track team and the coach. Today, Akinmola has found the group largely responsible for that reputation. He is very happy that the group is very accepting of him. Johnson informs Akinmola that Mitchell is the best miler in the state. Akinmola was completely unaware of that fact. Johnson tells Akinmola that, with his performance in the mile yesterday, he has a really good chance to make it to the state invitational meet. Akinmola is glad to hear all of this. Being new to the country, he did not know how he would measure up to the competition. Akinmola tells his newly found friends that he will play along with the Amazon women controversy. Today's tryout session runs longer than usual. Mr. Crumb has interfered on both days, causing several interruptions. On the way back to the lockers, Mr. Fraser asks Mr. Zunday, "What did Mr. Crumb want earlier?" Mr. Zunday yells out to Kathy, "Kathy, come over here for a minute." Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Fraser, "She's got to hear this too. This is good." Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Fraser, "I don't think Mr. Crumb will be interfering with practice anytime soon." When Kathy arrives, she asks, "Am I busted?" Mr. Zunday replies, "No. I think that's been put to rest, at least for a while." Mr. Zunday explains that Mr. Crum attempted to interrogate the field athletes, trying to find out which one of the guys threw the discus at him. Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Fraser and Kathy, Bobby B., stood out in the field where Mr. Crum was standing, and that he would give Springer $100 if he could hit him with the discus. Springer couldn't hit him. Mr. Fraser replies, well, maybe that issue has been buried. Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Fraser and Kathy, but, wait. Here's the good part. Wendy asked Mr. Crum, how do you know it wasn't one of the girls that threw the discus? Mr. Crum replied, a girl couldn't throw the discus 20 feet. Kathy starts laughing and says, oh really? I guess it couldn't have been me, then. Mr. Fraser adds, it takes a big guy, like Chucky, to throw a discus. Kathy exclaims, yeah. Us girls are delicate and fragile like little flowers. Mr. Zunday comments, yeah, especially Erica. Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday will have a tough time ahead assigning events this year. Eddie and Kathy are both interested in the discus. Akinmola and Elliot are strong new additions to the team. Amber excels at both the half mile and the mile. And the core members of the team are the best in the state at their events. All things considered, this is a good problem for Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday to have. The next day, the final team roster is posted. The roster attracts a lot of attention this year, primarily because it does not resemble any other roster posted in previous years. Eddie and Kathy, who arrived to school early, are among the first to take a look. As expected, Eddie and Kathy are running together in the 100-yard dash and in the 4x440 relay. Eddie notices that he will also be throwing the discus. Kathy, however, suddenly gets very upset because, although she turned in a relatively good performance in the discus, her name is not listed under that event. Kathy mentions to Eddie, I wonder how I didn't make the discus. I thought I was pretty good. I threw better than some of the guys who made it. Eddie tells Kathy, well, we can always ask Mr. Fraser and find out. Kathy replies, I wonder if I should. Because, you know, they have good reasons for doing what they do. Eddie replies, yeah. And if anyone would know, it would be you. You were the team assistant for 2 years. Kathy, who is very sad, tells Eddie, this is my senior year. I really wanted this. Not because I'm really good at it, but because I just think it would be so much fun. Kathy is very sad that her name was not listed under the discus. But if that's the coach's decision, Kathy will accept it. Eddie and Kathy look over the roster, checking out who is assigned to which event. Eddie asks, what's this U next to some of the names? Kathy tells Eddie, I don't know. U usually stands for unsatisfactory. Eddie mentions, Erica has the 440-yard dash, and a U next to her name. Kathy exclaims, oh, here it is on the bottom. U stands for utility. Eddie remarks, I wonder what that means. Kathy tells Eddie, hey, I'm going to go and ask Mr. Fraser what utility means, and maybe he'll mention to me why I didn't make the discus. Eddie replies, yeah. Let's go do that now. Kathy and Eddie walk over to the physical education office and see that Mr. Fraser is hard at work. He is still working on assigning events for the first meet. Kathy knocks on the door. Mr. Fraser turns around and tells Kathy, I was hoping to see you sometime before this afternoon. Kathy asks, about what? Mr. Fraser replies, the discus. I couldn't put your name on the roster under the discus because Mr. Crum will see it. If he saw your name listed under the event, he might reopen his investigation into who threw the discus when he ran into it. I have assigned you to that event, but we don't want to reignite that issue if we can help it. Remember, girls can't even throw the discus 20 feet. Kathy is now instantly happy and has trouble hiding it. She will get to throw the discus, even though it is not her best event. Kathy then asks Mr. Fraser, We were wondering what utility means next to someone's name. Mr. Fraser explains, a utility runner is someone whose events may change from meet to meet. We all have two goals. We have to win all of our meets, and I have to get as many of you as I can to state. If I switch a few things around, depending on what we're up against, we all stand a better chance of making our goals. Eddie remarks, that makes a lot of sense. Kathy agrees, mentioning, yeah, I can see that. This is part of the reason that Mr. Fraser is such a good coach. He informs the team of his reasoning behind his decisions. And his decisions are not carved in stone. Mr. Fraser also explains to Kathy and Eddie, this does not mean that each of you will be throwing the discus in every meet. Mr. Zunday will put up whomever he needs to take first, second, and third place. If we're up against a weak discus team, he'll put up some of the newer guys. You can be sure that, when we're up against Mark Miller, Eddie will be throwing the discus. Eddie asks, who's Mark Miller? Mr. Fraser replies, he throws for Jefferson. He took the silver medal at state last year. He expects to win the gold this year now that Sheffield is gone. Kathy quickly figures out the monumental task facing Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday. Mr. Fraser mentions, the first meet is in about a week, on Thursday. We'll have it all figured out and be ready by then. Kathy and Eddie head to class, with Kathy being much happier now than earlier today. Eddie walks into class and takes a look to see if Chucky made it to school or whether he is sitting in a jail cell somewhere. Seeing no sign of Chucky, Eddie exclaims, hey, where's the little Chucky today? Braden replies, the walk out to the track the other day must have been too much for him to handle. Johnson replies to Braden, saying, yeah, I'd say. He looked like he was really out of shape. He couldn't even make it out to the track. One of the students, who must be one of Chucky's friends, replies, he's in jail. Knowing exactly what happened, Eddie replies, jail. Wow. The poor little Chucky must have done something really bad this time. I wonder what it was. Eddie takes his seat, and Braden remarks, Erica's father must have hauled Chucky's ass off to the slammer. Mitchell tells Eddie, Chuck is moving up in the world. He's moved into a gated neighborhood with security guards. The tribe laughs over Mitchell's remark. Everyone knows exactly what happened to Chucky. They've all had enough of Chucky's crap, and are glad that Chucky is absent today. It certainly appears as if Erica's father, Mr. Gabriel, has delivered on his intentions to prosecute Chucky. The third day of tryouts brings an afternoon of relay drills. Relay drills are not anyone's favorite activity. The drills, however, are an important activity to the coaches, so they can accurately sort through the talent to form the relay teams. Strong relay teams are a definite plus during a meet. No points are awarded for second place when there are only two teams in the race. Anyone coming in second place in a two-team race gets the infamous title of being the only loser. And, as everyone already knows, losing is not Mr. Fraser's favorite activity. The team gathers on the track, awaiting their instructions for the day. Today, during the relay drill, everyone will be receiving the baton, running 220 yards, and then handing off the baton to the next person. Mr. Fraser and Barbara will be evaluating the runners' handoff skills, as they have in previous years. Mr. Zunday will be working with, and ranking, the field athletes. A lot of effort is being put into finely tuning the team this year. Mr. Fraser will announce the reason why in just a moment. Once the team is all together, Mr. Fraser makes the announcement, this year, we are in the fortunate position to shut out several teams. I cannot tell you how rare, if not impossible, that is in a high school track and field meet. For those of you who do not know, a shutout is where one team takes first, second, and third place in every single event. Our first opportunity will be in 1 week against Mark's favorite team, Centerville High School. From what I can tell, we can sweep every event. But in order to do so, we need a strong team in every relay event. Mr. Fraser asks the team, "Are you up for it?" The team cheers, and everyone is now highly motivated to perform well in the relay drills. The field athletes follow Mr. Zunday, and the runners prepare for the relay drill. Mr. Fraser tells the runners that initially 3 batons will be used for the drill, and that he might add another baton later once the field spreads out. He explains that there are no teams, but that the runners will line up, half on one side of the track, and half on the other side. The next runner in line will receive the baton from whoever comes down the track. Barbara takes half of the runners to the far side of the track. Mr. Fraser will be in contact with Barbara using a two-way radio, occasionally arranging certain handoffs. The drill is now ready to begin. Kathy, Paula, and Erica begin the relay drills. Mr. Zunday has everyone convinced that the ladies should go first, and the relay drills are no different. On the far side, they hand off to Hoffer, Elliot, and Johnson, which goes rather well. Next up to receive the baton is Eddie, Braden, and Mark, in that order. Mr. Fraser has his eye on Elliot's handoff. He is well aware of the skill level of everyone else. Elliot's handoff to Eddie goes well, and Mr. Fraser is quite impressed. Eddie, Mark, and Braden now each run their leg of the relay drill. When these 3 runners are on the track, there is more going on than just a drill. They are competing against each other. At the far side of the track, the runners get ready to receive the baton. Eddie approaches first and enters the transition zone. The handoff occurs quickly, and Eddie gets off the track. Mark and Braden are nearly head-to-head, with Braden enjoying a slight lead. 2 runners get onto the track to receive the batons from Braden and Mark. Braden, on the inside, appears as if he will hand off first. As Mark and Braden approach the transition zone, a 3rd runner unexpectedly enters the track just as the 2 runners expecting to receive a baton take off. Braden, attempting to avoid the idiot who entered the track, violently collides with him. Immediately afterward, a 2nd collision occurs involving the unexpected runner with Mark, who forcefully shoves the runner off to the side. The runner, laying face down on the track, is none other than Jimmy O'Brien, who was cut from the team on the first day by Mr. Fraser before tryouts ever began. O'Brien, perhaps, thought that he could somehow sneak back onto the team and be unnoticed by anyone. O'Brien is in contention with Chucky to be the most inept student in school. Today, O'Brien has the upper hand in that competition. Yesterday, it was Chucky who landed himself in jail. O'Brien lays motionless on the track, causing concern amongst many of the runners. Barbara checks O'Brien, who fortunately still has a pulse. At least he's still alive, but some would argue that he's always been brain dead. Today's blunder by O'Brien would provide substantial evidence of that theory. Barbara radios Mr. Fraser, telling him that there is a man down on the track. Mr. Fraser blows his whistle, halting the drill, and jogs over to see what happened. Barbara asks Braden and Mark, "How about you guys? Are you okay?" Mark replies, "Yeah. I didn't know we were trying out for football today." Braden replies, "I'm gonna be okay. Just as soon as I kick his puny little ass, I'm going to be okay. Someone wake that asshole up so I can kick his ass and knock him out again." Braden has a good reason to be upset. This is not the first time that Braden has collided with O'Brien on the track. It happened once before during indoor track tryouts. O'Brien did not fare well during that collision either. It does not appear that the outcome of this collision will be any better. Mr. Fraser arrives and, seeing O'Brien, exclaims, "Why is he out here?" "He was cut." Barbara, attending to O'Brien, tells Mr. Fraser, "He's unconscious. His pulse is 105 and regular, and respiration rate is 19. The collision was pretty hard. We'd better not move him. He probably has a concussion and he could have a fracture somewhere. Mr. Fraser agrees, and tells Mitchell to go inside and have someone call for an ambulance. O'Brien lies on the track and cannot be readily aroused. Mr. Fraser throws his hands in the air and exclaims, "What else can go wrong? 3 days of tryouts and practice, and 3 casualties. Mark replies, "O'Brien is collateral damage. Kind of like road kill." Braden comments, "You got that right, bro." O'Brien is laying on the outside of the track, attended to by Barbara until the paramedics arrive. Mr. Fraser tells the runners to continue the drill, but to remain staggered on the track. Mr. Fraser asks Kathy and Paula to temporarily take over Barbara's duties of evaluating the handoffs, which they are glad to do. Mr. Fraser also tells the runners to try to avoid running over O'Brien a second time. The paramedics arrive and attend to O'Brien, who is still unconscious. They place O'Brien's neck in a hard cervical collar in case he suffered a neck fracture. They then carefully place him on a stretcher, stabilizing him with restraints. The paramedics tell Barbara that she was wise in her decision to not move him. Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser watch as they load O'Brien into the ambulance and take him away. Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Fraser O'Brien is no longer eligible to try out for any team. And give that idiot an F in gym class. That goes for that Chucky guy too. Mr. Fraser replies, "They've both got a solid D right now. That won't be too hard." Mr. Fraser mentions, "I cut O'Brien before tryouts began. He didn't show up yesterday. I have no idea why he was even here today." Mr. Zunday responds, "Well, then, perhaps he learned something today. Or, then again, perhaps not. Stupidity seems to be his strong point, just like his father." The relay drills continue in full swing now that the hazard has been removed from the track. Mr. Fraser gathers enough statistical data to develop the relay team options for the upcoming meets. While he is watching the relay drill, Mr. Fraser is again contemplating another kill the man with the ball session tomorrow during practice. That worked well last year. It is unfortunate, however, that the baseball team is not much competition for the track team. With a team that is in better shape, such as the basketball team, the runners will likely get a better workout. Mr. Fraser calls an end to the day and informs everyone that the team is looking strong. On the way to the locker room, Mr. Fraser tries to ascertain information regarding how O'Brien snuck out onto the track. None of the upperclassmen seems to remember seeing him, either in the locker room or on the way out to the track. Some of the freshmen were saying that he was walking out to the track with them and was acting kind of odd. They report that they did not know who he was. Practice for the rest of the week goes very well. The team is very well prepared to meet Centerville on Thursday and is expecting to take every event. After a hard week of work, Kathy tells Eddie, "Hey, I need a beach trip." Eddie asks, "Where?" "Here." "Hawaii." "Somewhere new?" Kathy replies, "I don't know. Maybe we can get to the Caribbean or somewhere in the islands." Eddie replies, "We can try it out and see if there's a portal there." Kathy asks, "Do you want to see if Paula and Mark want to go?" Eddie replies, "Sure. We can ask them. Who knows, maybe they're already there." Kathy calls Paula, checking to see if they want to go. It didn't take much for Kathy to convince Paula to go with them. Kathy and Eddie gather up their stuff and head to Mark's house. When they arrive at Mark's house, Paula asks, "So, where are we going again?" Kathy, looking at a map, suggests, "We can try the Bahamas, the Dominatrix Republic, Jamaica, the Cayman Islands, St. Thomas, or St. Anybody for that matter. Just about anywhere we want to try." Eddie laughs and asks, "The Dominatrix Republic? Really?" Kathy, looking at the map again, replies, "Oops. The Dominican Republic." Mark mentions, "St. Thomas sounds like a good one. There are supposed to be some nice beaches there. Kathy replies, "That sounds good to me." Everyone agrees, so St. Thomas it is. They all ride to the portal with their bicycles. When they get there, Paula does the honors, raising her right hand in the air, saying, "Take us to St. Thomas, today, in the morning." They immediately find themselves among three boulders arranged in the all-too-familiar configuration, near a path leading to a side road. There is a lot of heavy vegetation in the area, which they make their way through in order to get to the road. Once they get to the main road, they take a look around for a landmark in order to find their way back. Mark notices there are two tennis courts diagonally across the street on the right, which should serve as a good landmark. They take a left and follow the road to see where it goes. A few open-air buses are also going in that direction, and the riders are dressed in swimsuits. They now know they are going in the right direction. Riding for less than a mile, they find themselves at a beach, which is exactly what they are looking for. The beach is called Megan's Bay, and seems to be a nice weekend hotspot. They ride into the park and pick out a spot in the sand under a palm tree. Next to them is one of the lifeguard stands. Kathy exclaims, "Eddie, just look at this place. It's beautiful." Eddie replies, "Wow. I've never seen a beach like this before." Paula mentions, "This beach is definitely made for relaxing." Mark tells Paula, "Yeah, I'd say." They lay out their towels, sit back, and take in the scenery for a while. After they lay on the beach for an hour or so, Kathy asks Eddie, "Can we just take this beach home with us?" Eddie replies, "It's not any harder to get here than to our beach." Mark adds, "It's actually easier to get here. It's only a mile from the portal." Paula mentions, "We can come here in the winter months too, since it's in the tropics." They all like Megan's Bay. It is perhaps the most laid-back and relaxing beach they've ever seen. They lay on the beach a while longer, then decide to go into the water. The water is warm, and the waves are a few inches high, not a few feet high like their beach back home. Swimming far out into the water, they get a good view of the beach from a different perspective. Kathy really likes Megan's Bay. She especially likes the view of the beach from the water. They swim back to the beach and lay out on their towels for an hour or so. Eddie casually asks Mark, "So, did you survive your collision, bro?" Mark asks, "Collision?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. With O'Brien the other day." Mark laughs and says, "Oh yeah. That was really weird. I was running and all of a sudden, there he was. He came out of nowhere. He definitely went down hard." Kathy mentions, "Last year, Mr. Zunday said O'Brien is too dangerous on the track for exactly the same reason. He caused a collision with Braden." Paula mentions, "That's three men down in 1 week. I definitely don't have a good feeling about O'Brien though." Eddie corrects Paula by asking, "Three men?" Paula laughs and replies, "Good catch. You definitely have a point. I stand corrected." Lunchtime comes, and there is only one choice for food, which is the concession stand at the beach. They take a walk over, enjoying the walk under the palm trees. Kathy takes almost no time to decide that she's having pizza. Everyone joins Kathy in her decision, so they get three large pizzas and drinks, and bring it back to their towels. Kathy notices the lifeguard has been sitting on his stand all morning and hasn't eaten anything. They offer the lifeguard some pizza, who gladly accepts. The lifeguard tells them that his relief hasn't shown up yet, so he is unable to leave. They have lunch and talk with the lifeguard for a while and find out that he is a senior in high school. He tells them that he really likes his job on the beach, but after he graduates, he also wants to get a job during the week selling jewelry in one of the shops where the cruise ships dock. The lifeguard notices their bicycles and asks Eddie, "Where did you guys get the nice bikes?" Eddie mentions, "We bike everywhere. We brought them with us." The lifeguard, pointing to his bicycle locked to a tree, tells Eddie, "That's mine over there. It's been very faithful. It gets me all over the island." The lifeguard's bicycle is a well-equipped Bianchi touring bicycle. Eddie tells the lifeguard, "That is seriously a really good bicycle." The lifeguard replies, "I bought it off a guy. It came in on a boat a year ago. I gave the guy $75 for it." Eddie tells him, "You definitely got the better end of that deal." The bicycle the lifeguard owns was probably stolen from the States and shipped to the islands for profit, along with a few thousand other bicycles that landed somewhere in the Caribbean. After lunch, everyone relaxes for a while longer, just enjoying the scenery. They go in the water a few more times, but the afternoon comes to a close and they have a whole day ahead of them back home. Kathy mentions to the group, "They ought to rename this place to Sleepy Beach or something. This place is way too relaxing." Paula agrees, mentioning, "This is the most relaxing beach I've ever been to. Maybe even the most relaxing place I've ever been." They head out and ride up to the road in search of the portal. The ride back along the narrow road goes quickly. Seeing the tennis courts ahead, they slow down and look for the side road leading to the portal. Mark spies the road, and they take the short ride to the portal. Everyone enters the portal and finds themselves back home again. Eddie and Kathy ride back to Kathy's house, where she goes to her room and gets her diary. Eddie and Kathy sit outside by the pool as she traces a map of St. Thomas onto the next blank page in her diary. She marks the location of the portal and writes the words, "May need a machete," on the page. After all, there was a lot of dense vegetation in the area. She draws a second map of the Megan's Bay area, including where they found the tennis courts. On the back of the page, she draws what she remembers of the beach and the location of the concession stand. She draws a picture of a pizza and draws an arrow connecting the pizza with the concession stand. Eddie is impressed with Kathy's artwork. After Kathy is done, she puts her diary back in its safe place. Kathy and Eddie return to the backyard. Eddie asks, "Now what are we doing?" Kathy replies, "Right now, we are checking for dead frogs." For the remainder of the morning, Kathy and Eddie get the pool in tip-top shape for the upcoming summer. Kathy is not about to have another run-in with a dead frog this season.